It's empty.
Perfect, Reese said, pulling it into the back of the ambulance. Park up ahead and get out of the car. You saw me in Chicago and Atlanta. Iranian hit team in Maryland. Hafez Qasem. Iranian intelligence. Haley pulled into a parking space in the government terminal, turned off the ambulance, and got out of the vehicle, leaving Reese alone to finish the job. Part 3. Eradication. The roaring of lions, the howling of wolves, the raging of the stormy sea, and the destructive sword are portions of eternity too great for the eye of man. William Blake, Proverbs of Hell. Chapter 58. CIA Gulfstream 550. Reese hadn't said much since they'd gone wheels up. He offered Haley the first shower and sat staring out the window at 45,000 feet as the Rolls-Royce engines pushed them toward the country's capital at Mach 0.85. They had packed overnight bags, so at least there were clean clothes to put on. The G-550's cabin was separated into three living areas with lavatories at each end of the aircraft. When Haley emerged, toweling off her wet hair, she noticed that the cooler Reese had brought on board was by the ice maker. It was wrapped with duct tape. "You want a drink?" Haley asked, sliding in across from Reese at the four-seat conference table.
"Huh?"
Reese asked, still deep in thought.
"You know, a drink?"
Haley asked, tipping her hand with an imaginary cocktail.
Yeah. Maybe another water."
"I'll join you,"
she said, leaning across the aisle and grabbing two waters from the fridge.
"I need to apologize to you, Reese."
"What for? I should be the one apologizing to you after what I just put you through."
"First, you didn't put me through anything. Secondly, we are here because of my theory, remember?"
"Good point. Apology accepted."
Haley laughed. She could tell he was spent. The fighting, the fire, the torture, the knowledge that what he did or didn't do determined the fate of the nation.
"As I was saying on the apology front, I had a preconceived notion of who you were, who my best friend was dating. Katie and I have known each other for a long time, and I can get protective."
"Believe me, I understand," Reese said.
"I had this vision of an ex-SEAL. Do you guys not say ex? It's so confusing with Marines. I think you don't say ex with them, maybe former?"
"I agree with you. It's confusing with Marines."
"Anyway, I watched the news 3 years ago like everyone else. I couldn't figure what Katie saw in you. She's never felt this way about anyone."
"Really?" Reese said, suddenly more alert.
"Really. So here's my apology. I saw myself as a doctor dedicated to saving lives around the globe. Médecins sans frontières and all that, battling infectious diseases on the front lines. I looked down on the military because it seemed our missions were so diametrically opposed. You take lives and I save them. I admit to being a bit of an elitist. Just ask my husband. He's the conservative one and I'm the hippie flower child. Our marriage works, though."
"He's a doctor at Fort Detrick, right?"
"That's right. He does what I do for CDC, but he does it for the Army. Well, not exactly the same thing. We are flip sides of the same coin. He's working on vaccines for soldiers and citizens infected with bioagents. I study naturally occurring infectious diseases and trace them to their index cases so we can better understand how they start, how they spread, and how we can stop them."
"I have nothing but respect for what you and your husband do," Reese said.
Haley studied the dark green eyes of the man across from her.
"I know why you do what you do, Reese. I saw it today."
"I just don't see another way."
"We are close, but we are on the clock."
"I have been processing the events of the past few hours. Without you, we would not have the information we do. We'd only have my theory."
"Speaking of processing, let's do a hot wash."
"A what?"
Haley asked.
"Hot wash. An informal after-action report. To go through what we learned today so we can apply the lessons going forward."
"Like an operative report?"
"I don't know what that is."
"A report that goes in a medical record post-surgery documenting the procedure."
"Yeah, like that,"
Let's start with my theory. This is not a naturally occurring virus.
Starting there, we now have two people involved in the plot confirming that you are correct. Downrange, I'd verify those reports via two separate and distinct independent networks to ensure we were not getting played.
What do you mean?
In Iraq and Afghanistan, there were those who saw us as a way to settle what were sometimes centuries-old feuds. Could be because someone stole someone else's great-great-grandfather's goat. Anyway, they would tell us that so-and-so was Al-Qaeda or Jaish al-Mahdi, so we would go pay them a visit in the middle of the night. We got wise to it pretty quickly, but it was something we always had to take into account when evaluating intelligence. In this case, Shahram and Ali were not independent intelligence sources, as they were working together.
I see.
So ideally, I'd want confirmation via two unrelated human, as in human intelligence, networks, and then substantiated via some technical means like phone calls, text messages, or emails.
So you think that Shahram and Ali might have had this story concocted to mix in just enough doubt that we couldn't trust them?
I think that's a distinct possibility and one that our intelligence agencies will certainly highlight when briefing the president. He is going to need solid proof that by avoiding this action, he's not condemning 90% of the country to death.
How do we verify their admissions?
Let's go back a second, Rees said. First, why disguise it as a naturally occurring virus?
To hide the perpetrator.
So who has Marburg variant U in their arsenal?
Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran,
Haley confirmed. All countries that could potentially sell it to a terrorist organization, Rees said, thinking aloud.
Maybe they didn't sell it to a terrorist organization. Maybe they perpetrated the attack.
Then they'd be culpable, Rees said.
True.
Which means we could retaliate.
Also true.
Haley, do you know what's on the table as a response to an attack on this country using a weapon of mass destruction? WMD is defined as nuclear, chemical, and you guessed it, biological weapons.
Nuclear response,
Haley correctly guessed. That's right. By mimicking a respiratory spread of a naturally occurring virus, a country or group could turn us against ourselves.
If they knew about the FAE option, Haley said.
You saw it yourself in Africa. There are very few secrets left in the world, and if you created the U.S. or USSR bioweapon programs after World War II, you would have put protocols in place to stop the spread of one of your own weaponized diseases.
Protocols that included destroying your own cities,
Haley said, completing the thought. I think so. We've learned we have plans in place to destroy sections of the country to contain a spread. I'm sure the Russians did too.
Knowing that, who is behind this? Maybe a better question is, what would you do if you were planning this attack?
Rees paused and looked out the window. I'd look to the past.
Meaning?
What has the enemy learned by watching us in Iraq and Afghanistan over the past 20 years? What did they learn before that by watching us react to terrorism of the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s?
Well,
they learned that proxies work, Rees said, answering his own question. Iran has been at war with us for over 40 years. Longer if you take it back to the CIA coup in 1953. Ali Ansari is from Iran. He mentioned Hafez Qassem before he died. Qassem is the lead Iranian intelligence chief in the United States. I was involved in tracking down what may have been an Iranian terrorist network before the virus hit. I think that's why Katie and I were targeted.
Slow down, Rees. You were making the case that Iran used a proxy group to release a bioagent in the U.S. so we would think it was spreading naturally.
That's right. If we buy that it's from Angola, there are no Iranian fingerprints. If we buy that it's homegrown radicalized citizens, then we still have no one to retaliate against but ourselves. Iran remains clean, just like they have for the past 40 years, using Hezbollah and Quds Force operatives to do their dirty work.
Rees, we need to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is a bioweapon and that it is not a respiratory spread virus.
Can we just look up Marburg variant U in the gene book or compare a picture or something? He asked.
It doesn't work that way. Back when the Soviets weaponized Marburg, gene sampling or other electronic microscope documentation didn't exist. We only have samples from more recent outbreaks, and besides, you would have to compare the two physical samples. We need the genome of the sample, not just a photo.
So we need a live sample of a weaponized Marburg variant U virus next to a current sample from an infected patient from today? Reese asked, wrapping his mind around the problem.
Exactly. I need a sample of the original virus, the original Marburg variant from Soviet days. We do a side-by-side genomic evaluation. If there is no variance, then we will have established that this is an intentional bioweapon release on U.S. soil. It would also confirm that it had to have been released through aerosolized droplets by a pressure source, like the example of perfume in a mall.
So, we need the original Soviet strain.
Was that a statement or a question?
Haley asked.
Regardless, good luck finding it.
Luck is the residue of preparation, Reese whispered, his eyes focused past the clouds, beyond the windows.
What?
Just something an old commanding officer of mine used to say. He turned back to Haley. One more time, who do we know has Marburg variant U in their arsenals?
Russia, for sure. And we suspect China, North Korea, and Iran.
And the United States, Reese said, working the problem.
Never confirmed, but yes, the United States.
We need that Soviet sample, Reese said, thinking out loud.
And how do you suggest we get our hands on a top-secret bioweapon that the U.S. may or may not have developed in violation of several international treaties?
We are going to steal it.
Are you sure you are just drinking water?
Haley, what exactly does your husband do at Fort Detrick?
He studies Level 4 weaponized pathogens.
Pathogens that the United States officially does not weaponize?
Reese!
How do you think he'd feel about committing treason? Chapter 59. Masada Security Solutions Corporate Office, McLean, Virginia.
What can I get for you, Senator?
Sawyer asked. They were sitting in Sawyer's office on the top floor of the Masada corporate building, a short drive from both Langley and the Pentagon.
Something expensive, now that it's finally on your dime.
Fortunately for you, all the selections are expensive, as you put it. How about a martini?
That would be ideal.
Vodka or gin?
Gin, of course. Bombay Sapphire with three olives, if you would be so kind.
Sawyer made the drink in a chilled glass at his private office bar. He then poured himself a Hennessy Paradis Imperial and sat down in a leather chair adjacent to the sofa where Senator Thwaite now made himself comfortable, opposite an 86-inch flat screen set to a cable news channel.
"Shouldn't you be in lockdown in the Capitol building for briefings from the executive branch?"
Sawyer asked. Thwaite rolled his eyes.
"You best be careful, Senator. You know how the media loves catching politicians breaking their own rules. It makes for great content."
"That's why I'm here in this secure building with you and not getting photographed out at the French Laundry or getting my hair done like those jackasses in California."
Sawyer stifled a laugh.
"It's almost on. Where's the unmute button on this thing?"
the senator asked, examining the remote control in his hand as if it were a foreign object.
"Let me,"
Sawyer said, swiping to his phone's Savant system application, which bypassed the remote on the coffee table.
"You know, you should invest in some less depressing art," Thwaite remarked, looking around the room.
"Oh, and what would you suggest?"
"Something a little less morbid would spruce things up in here," he said, gesturing to the two large works that dominated the room,
one behind the bar and the other between two large bookcases on the opposite side of the enormous office.
"What are those, anyway?"
"The one behind the bar was done by an old friend in Ranger Regiment. He was with me in Mogadishu,"
Sawyer said, examining the canvas from afar.
"It's called the Mogadishu Mile. It is a reminder of how quickly circumstances can change."
"And that one?" Thwaite asked, taking a stiff drink.
"You don't recognize it?"
"Should I?"
"Remnants of an Army, painted by Elizabeth Thompson, Lady Butler, in 1879.
It depicts the 1842 British retreat from Kabul to Jalalabad. Have you been there, Senator?
Afghanistan? Of course,
the senator said, removing the toothpick with three olives and sliding the first one between his yellowing teeth. Jabad? Gardez? Khost? Abad?
Eric, you know I visited the troops on base in Bagram in 2004. You provided security. I also spent Thanksgiving in Iraq in 2009. I'm no stranger to war zones.
Fallujah? Ramadi? Najaf?
No, the Green Zone,
Thwaites said, making Sawyer's point. Ah, yes. I remember the photo op now.
Fuck you, Eric. Some of us are soldiers and some of us are statesmen.
I think you mean politicians.
Don't say it with such disdain, Eric. Remember who pays for all this,
Thwaites said, devouring his last two olives and gesturing to the grand office with his empty glass. Let me get you another.
Thank you. If you weren't a hired gun, you would make an excellent bartender.
Sawyer chuckled and set about making his guest a second drink.
What happened to our Lone Ranger, anyway?
Thwaite asked, nodding back at the famous oil painting. That's Dr. William Bryden. He was a surgeon. It was rumored that of the 16,000 who began the 70-mile retreat, he and his horse were the only survivors.
True.
There were, in fact, other survivors. Some straggled in after the good doctor. Others had been captured and enslaved, but survived. Regardless, the theme and intent of the painting holds true. The poor horse lay down in a stable in the Jalalabad fort and never got up. He, too, a casualty of the Afghan plains.
Poetic.
When you're wounded and left on Afghanistan's plains, go, go, go like a soldier. Sawyer recited.
What's that?
No matter. The original painting hangs in Somerset, you know.
Somerset?
Yes. The Somerset Military Museum, England. One day the original will hang here.
Bloody depressing,
the senator observed. Just like in Mogadishu, the tide can turn in an instant, Senator. Even against an empire. The enemy is always watching, always learning. Always adapting.
Dismal, if you ask me.
Have you read The Great Game, Senator? Sawyer asked, handing the older man his second cocktail.
I don't have time to read, Sawyer. I am busy running a country.
Pity. And one might argue that the current president is running the country, I'm afraid, Sawyer said, reminding Thwaite of his loss.
Not for long. Turn it up, it's coming on now,
he said, eagerly consuming all three olives that graced his refreshed drink. The whore of war turned up the volume through his app and watched as the network led with the caption, Presidential Assassin Targets Innocent Muslims.
Is it taping?
Thwaite asked. Yes, the DVR is recording.
Good.
The newscaster solemnly lectured his audience.
We've received disturbing video this evening. Video that purportedly shows former Navy SEAL James Reese committing murder. These alleged murders are also classified as hate crimes. You will remember Commander Reese from the Capstone scandal, where 3 years ago he went on a murderous cross-country rampage, killing those he believed were responsible for what some say were his own mistakes that led to the ambush of his SEAL team in the mountains of Afghanistan. Commander Reese was pardoned under dubious circumstances by the previous administration, so he never stood trial for those murders. I want to warn you, this footage may be disturbing to some viewers.
A crisp image of whites, grays, and blacks filled the screen. Like an old black-and-white TV updated with 21st-century resolution, what was clearly a van parked just ahead of a smaller sedan on the right side of a road filled the screen. A man was leaning against the smaller car, his face and hands white against his darker clothing. White hot, Sawyer said.
Excuse me?
It's a thermal imaging system from one of our surveillance vehicles. The hotter parts glow white. The colder areas are dark.
Oh, yes, I know.
The conspirators watched as a man swung his feet over the guardrail and paused to look almost directly into the camera.
his face taking on the aura of a ghoul, with the light and dark portions recreated by the camera in high-resolution pixelated heat. He stared for what seemed like an eternity before turning to move toward the two vehicles. They watched the figure walk along the side of the road and raise his rifle to his shoulder as he approached the sliding door of the van. The audio recorder picked up the shot, and the video caught the smoking man dropping to the ground.
"He indexed off the cigarette," Sawyer said.
"What do you mean?"
"It's dark. The man he killed was not a professional. Rhys must have seen the cigarette in the darkness, which indicated head placement. He sighted on the cigarette and then fired a few inches left, hitting his target in the head."
"This is my favorite part," Thwaite said.
They had both watched the video multiple times before emailing it anonymously to multiple friendly